everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another DC Spotlight Friday. Today, I'm going to be talking about Shazam number 4, Freedom Fighters number 4, Hawkman number 11, and Justice League number 21. So a lot of books to get through. So let's go ahead and dive right in, starting with Freedom Fighters number 4. This is written by Robert Venditti. We have pencils by Eddie Barrows. The inks are by Ebir Ferreira, and the colors are by Adriano Lucas, who does just an absolutely incredible job. I've been singing the praises of Adriano's colors in this book. I think basically from the beginning, they've been pretty amazing. And letters are by And World Designs. So we know that in this reality, in this world that Robert Venditti has created, it's sort of the modern version or the current DC Universe version of Earth-X. And the difference between Earth-X and any other Earths of the DC multiverse is this is the Earth where the Nazis won. They won World War II, they've taken over, and for the first time we're seeing how that's played out over decades, right? Ever since the war ended up until till current time. So we know that in the 60s, on the day that in our history is the day of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, that was actually the day that the Freedom Fighters were actually finally defeated by the Third Reich, and Uncle Sam disappeared, people lost all hope, and the Nazis have been in power ever since without any resistance. You know, they had been in power ever since they won the war, but since that day, they've been in power without resistance. So there's a new version of the Freedom Fighters. There are new versions of Black Condor and Human Bomb. And we've got another Phantom Lady, as well as a doll woman instead of a doll man. And, you know, we've seen that they've been doing various things over the first three issues to try to bring Uncle Sam back, which requires Americans to actually believe in him. They need to believe in freedom and in the ideas and ideals of America. And so this starts off, it's a cool cover with Uncle Sam's fist punching up through the ground from his grave. And as we open, we see a bald eagle flying in the air, and there's a couple of Nazi soldiers talking like, "Do you see that? It's a bald eagle. Supposedly they were eradicated in the 60s, but it looks like maybe one survived." And then that bald eagle, unfortunately, is shot by one of the soldiers. And he's saying, "What a lucky day. Good thing you were here. Nobody would have believed me." And the other soldier's like, "You wouldn't have been so glad if I would have seen it first. I would have been the one to shoot it." And then their superior officer's there yelling at him, saying, "Get back in formation before I discipline you for shooting your gun off without authorization." And they're trying to tell the sergeant, "Hey, but there was a bald eagle, and you know, it's worth a fortune." And he's like, "You know, there's no bald eagle. You guys are crazy. You know, they're not believing him." So we find out it's actually graduation day. These are two soldiers that have just basically gone through basic training, and they're saying to one another, "Well, you know, regardless of what happened, if there was a bald eagle or not, it's a good day because we're real Nazis now. Let's go get information." And as the camera pans back, we get a double page spread on the next page that is Mount Rushmore. But this obviously is a very different Mount Rushmore because the Nazis won the war. So we see Adolf Hitler the first, Adolf Hitler the second, and some other person, some other Nazi on the mountain as well. Maybe it's Goebbels, I'm not sure. So anyway, this issue is called The Monument, and deep inside Adolf Hitler's stone ear of that monument, of that new kind of Nazi Mount Rushmore, we see Doll Woman's there, and she's using a jackhammer, and she's jackhammering away, and there's a voice coming over the radio saying, "What's your progress?" I love her response. She goes, "I'm moving as fast as I can. You know, a diamond tip jackhammer doesn't work real fast when it's only three inches big, you know." And meanwhile, Cash, who is sort of the tech leader of the resistance, is saying, "Okay, well, the broadcast is about to start. You know how punctual the Nazis are, so check your distance." She goes, "Okay, I'm just under 30 feet from the, you know, the center of his head, basically." And he says, "Okay, well, that's going to have to be enough. We're out of time." And we see Doll Woman open up this case. And what has happened is the human bomb has cut off pieces of his skin, and they've turned them into bombs. We know the human bomb's skin, whenever he touches something, his skin explodes. He's protected from the blast, but, you know, everything else gets blown up. So they've used that. They've weaponized his actual skin, and they've made them into these dermis charges, they call them. And Cash has figured out a way to weaponize it. So she finishes planting all those packs, and she says, you know, this is the fourth tunnel I've pounded out in 3 days. Obviously, they want to blow up the whole monument. And why couldn't we have made an extra one of these charges to drop on Adolf Jr.'s head? And Cash says, well, we need him alive. We can't kill him. So obviously, they have plans for him in some way. And Doll Woman says, yeah, you're right. And if there's any Sioux left, they're finally going to get their mountain back. If there's any Sioux left after the Razi purges. So, you know, clearly following that whole Nazi philosophy of, you know, Aryan power and, you know, wanting pure blonde hair, blue eyed Aryan people, you know, they've whatever Native Americans were left, the Nazis have tried to purge them. So meanwhile, in the heartland, that extra dimensional realm of ideas, we see some hands coming up out of the ground, kind of shaking and covered with dirt. And they're starting to pull themselves up. Meanwhile, the commencement for these graduates, these new Nazis that are about to be officially brought into the ranks of the Nazi army. Their commencement's about to start. The broadcast is starting. And to give the speech for this graduating class is the supreme leader himself, Adolf Hitler II. So we see him ascend to the podium. We get a scene back in the heartland where now the hands and the forearms are up out of the grave. We see a white-haired head start to rise up as well. Back to the commencement, Adolf Hitler II is saying, this was a great day that you've all earned. From this day forward, you're forever going to be a soldier of the Reich. It's a day you will never forget. And as he says that, behind him, the whole mountain, you know, all the faces, the heads on there just explode. And everybody's in shock. Doll Woman, who has obviously made it to a safe distance, is toasting herself with a frosty beverage, saying that's a defacing. She's very pleased with her work. And the Secret Service version of these Nazis are taking the fear away, saying, we must go. We've got to protect you. And we get a glimpse back into the heartland, that idea, that realm of ideas. And we see that it's Uncle Sam who's been pulling himself up out of the ground. He's got his hat, which is kind of rumpled. He's got a hole in his pants on a knee. He's got, you know, some wear and tear on his shoulders, on his suit. But he hears something for the first time in a long time. He hears something that has awoken him from his grave. And he says, is that you, Old Glory? I can hear you. I've been asleep for so long, I didn't think I'd ever hear you again. And the clouds are moving in because there's a storm brewing. And we see him stand up and brush himself off, and rain starts to fall. And he's walking through this this graveyard of ideas in this realm of ideas. And we see some of the tombstones say bear arms or speech or religion or peaceably assemble. You know, these ideas that have been killed by the Nazis. He even sees other... He sees markers or gravestones for other sort of mythical figures that are the embodiments of other countries. He says, all my friends are gone. Marianne, Hispania, Johnny Canuck, you know, Marianne being the mythical figure for Britain, Hispania for Spain, Johnny Canuck for Canada. He says, you know, I miss you all, especially you, Britannia. And he goes up to the lion and he says, we got in some scrapes over the decades, right? We didn't always agree, but we'd never see anything like those Nazi monsters. And then again, if I'm awake, you know, it means the spirit of 76 is back from the dead. And I feel it in my own bone, my old bones. So, you know, this idea, that spirit of 76, that the spirit of America, people are starting to believe again because of the things that the freedom fighters are doing in the real world. And so he says, I can hear the drums going again and they're playing my tune. And meanwhile on, Luftwaffe 1, which is basically the Nazi equivalent of Air Force 1, the Führer is there, Adolf Hitler II. He's having a drink. He's trying to calm his nerves. Somebody knocks on the door to his office, and he tells them to enter, and it's actually Adolf Jr. III, Addy, as he's called. And he's pretty much a crazy psychopath. And he walks in and says, "Hello, Daddy. Glad to see you weren't blasted to meaty bits." And Adolf Hitler, we know last issue, had Adolf Hitler Jr., or the second, had put Addy in charge of crushing the rebellion. And he comes walking in, and the Fuhrer yells at him, "You know, it's been 3 days. You haven't found anybody. The Reich's being humiliated. Today's attack was broadcast to everybody." And then he says, "Wait, is that blood on your pants?" And Addy, again, this guy's got problems, man. He's not all there. And he pulls a severed finger out of his pocket, and he says, "How absent-minded of me! I put such things in my pocket." And he throws it away, and he tells his dad, "Hey, Rome wasn't, you know, burnt and down in a day." And the Fuhrer doesn't want to hear it. He's like, "Look, I put you in charge. You need to get some results, right? We don't even know why they hacked our network." And Addy is saying, "Well, your intelligence has gotten kind of sloppy, right? The Plastic Man, which is kind of the secret service where they've weaponized the abilities of Plastic Man, and so they can change shape and change form and all that kind of thing. And they're like the secret police." Addy says they barely file any reports, and Overman hasn't been deployed in decades. And we did hear something about Overman, but not exactly sure what he is at this point. But we do know the Fuhrer kind of fears him. And to that point, he says, "We don't need Overman. The populace was subdued. There's nothing to report. That's why the Plastic Men are not filing reports." And Addy says, "You know, there's always something to report, even when there isn't. That's how you keep people in line, by keeping them constantly scared. Even you just grab a random person and treat them very hard, and the rest will be easy, right? That's how you keep the fear." And Fuhrer doesn't want to hear it. He's like, "This is a job I gave you. Fix it. You know, these public displays of defiance, you know, people are starting to believe America isn't dead. Our own soldiers and police are growing afraid." And Addy, for as psychopathic as he is, and crazy, and loves to torture, and just the guy's off his rocker, he's kind of shrewd when it comes to this sort of thing, which I suppose is why the Fuhrer put him in charge in the first place. He says, "You know, the question is, how come the freedom fighters didn't kill you? That's what you should be asking yourself, because what better statement of defiance than to assassinate the Fuhrer? And they could have done it so easily. What do you think that means?" And he walks away. And again, this guy, he's very sadistic, and he knows what he's doing. And to have that insight is, you know, it's pretty true, because the Fuhrer hasn't thought about it at all. But the other reason he does it is because he knows it's going to scare his dad. And sure enough, as he walks out of the room, we see the Fuhrer's left standing there on his own, thinking about why they didn't assassinate him, and thinking about how easily he could have been killed. And you can see him kind of standing there sweating. So the scene changes. We're now inside the Allegheny Mountains. We're looking at the mobile base of the resistance, called the Blue Tracer. And it's this giant motorized tank, basically, that is very huge. And we know it can go underwater. We know it can fly. It's a pretty high-tech piece of machinery. And we see the human bomb, and he's cutting off pieces of his skin from his fingertips and dropping them in these little, almost like these petri dishes with a solution in them, and basically how they make those bombs, like the one that Doll Woman just used. And Doll Woman's actually there watching Human Bomb put these pieces of his skin into this vault. She says, "You must really love your work because you're positively glowing," which, you know, that's part of the sort of side effect of his skin being, you know, explosive, basically. And he doesn't really want to hear it. He's like, "Get out of here, Dolly. You know, Cash coated everything in this room with the same polymer that my suit's made out of, so it won't explode when I touch it, because just a few of my skin flakes were enough to turn a mountain into rubble. So what do you think they'll do to an anthill like you?" And Doll Woman, it seems like she's kind of searching for a connection. She's like, "Just relax. You know, you're the junior member of the team. You know, you're the newest one, and you haven't gone out of your way to make friends. I just thought you could use some company." And Human Bomb doesn't want to hear it. Clearly he's gone through some trauma. He says, "Friends, what makes you think me being part of this team means I want to be friends, right? The things that make me and the things that make you guarantee will always be alone. My skin's always going to explode when it touches something. You're always going to spend the rest of your life the size of a toy. And Phantom Lady told me that you used to have religion. You were a pacifist, right? You wouldn't even fight, and now you're just angry. So you want to feel sorry for someone, start with yourself." And Doll Woman kind of taken aback. She looks down. She goes, "You're right. I am angry, but I enjoy killing these Nazis, and it's got nothing to do with my height." And we see her remembering something, and she's yelling, "John, John!" And she's cradling what looks to be Doll Man in her hand. So maybe that's why, you know, she wants revenge. She's lost somebody that she loved, and she tells Human Bomb, "You know, religion's the only thing that they didn't take from me, and that I gave it up for free. So, you know, maybe she realized they've taken everything but this. I'm going to give up my religion too. I'm going to give up my beliefs in pacifist ways so that I have nothing left to lose." And when she says that, Human Bomb, he's like, oh, like he's taken aback, and maybe they're starting to actually form a bond despite the Human Bomb's reservations about that. And then we see Phantom Lady kind of slipping some food in through a slot in the bottom of the door. And she says, "Dave, be sure to eat. We're all hoping we see you later." And Human Bomb kind of, you know, regathers himself and says, "All right, you got to go, Dolly, because if I accidentally bump my lip with some of this food, you're going to be hit like a bug on a windshield." So she goes ahead and takes off. And as she's leaving, Human Bomb says, "These attacks, these killings, do you really believe it can work? Can it bring back Uncle Sam?" And Doll Woman says, "Well, not a moment too soon. So keep making those firecrackers, Bomber, because I'm finally having fun." You know, she's finally getting some revenge. Meanwhile, back in South Dakota, we see Addie's actually torturing one of those soldiers we saw on the first couple pages that that killed that bald eagle. And Addie's saying, why did you signal them? Like, tell me what you know. Tell me what you know about this this attack." And he's saying, I don't know anything. We saw a bald eagle." And Addie's like, "I don't believe you. I think your gunshot signaled the start of the attack. There's no bald eagles left." And he basically slices the guy's throat. I mean, there's blood flying everywhere. Addie's crazy. There's no other way about it. So meanwhile, while he's in there finishing off this guy, the soldiers come knocking on his door, and he comes out of his little torture chamber, I guess. And he says, "Hey, you know, we found something and you thought you might want to see." And Addie's like, "Well, you're very rude to interrupt my chat, but this better be important." And they show him the bald eagle. They say, "Hey, look what we found in the grass, not far from the parade grounds." And he doesn't even, like, he's been told about the bald eagle and that's why they fired the shot, but he doesn't even seem to put it together. Doesn't really care that the guy was actually telling the truth. Cause he goes, "Oh, how beautiful. It's going to look great, you know, stuffed and mounted on my shoulder. What about the other soldier?" And they said, he died too. There was too much blood loss. And so Addie says, "Well, you know, at least it ended up being my lucky day, because I'm going to have this bald eagle stuffed and mounted on my mantle." So meanwhile, back in the land of ideas in the heartland, we see Uncle Sam continuing to kind of regain power. He starts to look even more regal, more real, as it were, as he's standing there with the rain coming down. And he says, "The thunder's rolling in. You know, more people are starting to believe." And that's why he's regaining his power. And sure enough, to kind of illustrate the point, on the bottom of the page, it's a great page, it's a splash page that's kind of a montage of these two images. And the hill that Uncle Sam is standing on is filled with another image of the Fury still on the plane, having a second drink to try to calm his nerves. And one of his functionaries comes in and says, here's the latest reports from the cultural police, that 6 seconds of the attack got aired before they were able to break the transmission. And phone and online surveillance are showing an exponential increase in the words freedom fighters. A lot of the enlisted officers are wondering if there's going to be a new revolution. We're trying to take the appropriate disciplinary actions. But that idea, the idea that the Nazis can be defeated, is growing. People are having the belief that America can come back from this, right? The spirit of 76, as Uncle Sam put it, is rising. It's a tide that's rising. And that's why it's getting more powerful. So the Fuhrer says, "Okay, great. That'll be all for now." And he sits there and he's looking at these reports. And as Uncle Sam is standing there, he says, "Talk to me, Old Glory." And he hears some murmurs. And the Fuhrer's reading the reports, and Uncle Sam's saying, "Louder, get louder." And Uncle Sam kind of tosses, the Fuhrer rather, kind of tosses the reports aside. And all of a sudden, the voice does get louder. and it starts talking about the things that the freedom fighters have done. They blew up the whole mountain. They blew up the museum in Dallas. They killed an iron police. And Uncle Sam is hearing this. He's saying louder, louder, and it starts to get so loud that it's causing him pain. And the Fuhrer himself is starting to believe, starting to doubt and believe in America and worry. And that's even feeding in more to the power that Uncle Sam is gathering. And he hears the voice saying the Fuhrer can't stop them. And finally, Uncle Sam says, louder, louder. And the Fuhrer actually says out loud, I'm afraid. And when he says that, it allows Uncle Sam to kind of break through the barrier of the heartland and come back to the real world. And it happens in Philadelphia, where we see there's a black man. And in this reality, they're actually tagged on their ear, just like livestock, because that's basically how the Nazis treat them. And we see this this person of color, this African-American man, being accosted by one of the Nazi soldiers. And he's, because this guy had been wearing red, white, and blue, he's got a white shirt, a blue sweater, and a red hat. And the soldier's, you know, yelling at him, saying, your work privileges are revoked. You're not supposed to wear red, white, and blue together. And then there's a bright light and a fist comes out of it, knocks the soldier out. And Uncle Sam steps through the portal and he says, one Nazi down, the rest of them to go, as people look on. And we get the blurb of next, who's ready for a revolution. So enough people have believed, even the Fuhrer himself has had doubts that the Nazis can't win. And he's actually afraid. He's afraid of Uncle Sam. And that was kind of the final push that allowed Uncle Sam to re-manifest in the real world. So can't wait to see what happens next issue and have Uncle Sam join up with these new freedom fighters. I mean, it's going to be sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like the more people that believe, the more powerful Uncle Sam gets, which then in turn causes more people to believe, which then causes him to become more powerful. So it's just like, it's getting that snowball rolling downhill, right? So it starts to pick up speed and get bigger and become its own movement and have its own momentum to the point where it's going so fast and it's so big and it's so powerful that the Nazis aren't going to have any time to stop it or not going to have the ability to stop it. So the story is very, it's very tightly paced. It's well plotted. It's well scripted by Robert Venditti. And the artwork by Eddie Barrows and Iber Ferreira, and especially the colors by Adriana Lucas, which I always talk about, are fantastic. There's always at least one giant explosion every issue that just really shows what Adriana Lucas can do with color. And this time, obviously, it's the Nazi version of Mount Rushmore exploding, which is just awesome. But more than that, it's about this idea of America and reminding us who we are. And we all could use that reminder these days. So even though this came out in, I guess, 2019, it's still more, you know, appropriate than ever to be fighting against this fascist Nazi regime and remembering that as Americans, we all need to be together. We're more alike than different, and our strength lies in working toward things together rather than focusing on our differences. So love the story, and I'll go ahead and, you know, finish it out, talk about the remaining eight issues on future spotlights as they come. So all right, let me move on to the next book that I want to talk about, which is Shazam number 4. This one's written by Jeff Johns. We have art by Dale Eaglesham and Marco Santucci. Colors are by Mike Atea and letters are by Rob Lee. So we did see in previous issues how Shazam and his Shazam family went to the Rock of Eternity and they discovered the kind of the train station that led to the other seven magic lands or six magic lands other than Earth. And they ended up in the Fun Lands, met King Kid. But then when King Kid realized, and they were all in their civilian versions of themselves, you know, kids, and when they actually transformed after having some worries about who King Kid might be, once King Kid was like, wait, you're adults, you were adults disguising yourself as kids, and he separated them and sent them out into the different lands. So things are not looking good for the Shazam family. They've all been separated. So the issue starts off. We see an alarm clock going off, and we're in the animal lands, and we meet Talkie Tawny for the first time, who's kind of a classic talking tiger character from the Fawcett years of Shazam. And he gets up, brushes his teeth. He's talking to himself, doing his morning affirmation, saying, "It's nice to meet you. No, I won't eat you. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance." Clearly he has some issues remembering not to eat people he's not supposed to eat. And in fact, when his alarm goes off in the morning, he hears the radio say, "Good morning. The mayor's going to be addressing the growing food controversy as carnivores and omnivores continue to challenge the laws of nature," right? Like eating people they're not supposed to eat. And in fact, there's a book on his table that says how to stop eating your friends, that he picks up and puts inside his suit coat pocket as he leaves his house. So as he's walking down the street, heading to work, he overhears some people saying there was a human, or he overhears some animals, I guess you'd say, saying there was a human sighting. Could it be a hoax? Is it a shock? And they say, well, it's all unsettling, and the people are wondering, is it just a way to sell more papers? And you know, humans are extinct thanks to the mayor. And as Talkie Tawny is hearing these things, walking down the street, he's approached by some, I guess, police sort of people. They're called the Watchdogs. And Talkie Tawny's like, "What? I didn't do anything. What have I done wrong?" And they reach inside his coat and they pull out the book. They say, "How to stop eating your friends? Yeah, this is forbidden literature, Tawny. You're going to need to come with us." And he's like, I don't know how that got there. Meanwhile, out in the forest that surround this city that's inhabited by anthropomorphic animals, we see that Freddy and Darla have showed up. And they never transformed into their Shazam counterparts or Shazam personas before they were ceremoniously dumped into the animal lands by King Kid. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. They're like, "Hey, one minute I was having a milkshake and the next I'm thrown up in the forest. Like, what's going on?" And Darla's like, "Look, it's a kitty." And she's hugging the police officer there that is trying to capture her, who looks like a cat. And they're like, "Get off me. What are you doing?" And Freddy's trying to tell her, "Come on, Darla, we got to go." And she's like, "No, but I love animals and animals love me." And they throw a net over them and capture him. And Freddy's trying to transform. He's saying, "Shazam, Shazam, Shazam, nothing's happening." And Freddy's like, "Wow, where's Billy when we need him? Where Billy is, he's still in the Funlands." And King Kid is telling Shazam, or telling Captain Marvel, "Hey, I should have been prepared for this invasion. Such as yourself, once the doors were opened, I can't believe that an adult would be foolish enough to attempt us to attack us by coming in disguise as a children or as a child. But your name is Billy, right?" And Shazam's like, "Well, yeah, what'd you do with my brothers and sisters?" And King Kid says, "Well, I expelled them. They went to wherever they went, you know, expelled them from the Funlands because they're no longer my problem. So my clown sent them to wherever they went, and that's their problem now. On the other hand, the girl Mary, the one who's almost 18, I'm going to show you what I did with her." And he, as they drag Shazam, the clowns, these servants of his, kind of enforcers, if you will, they drag Shazam in the elevator and they hit a button that says "the below." And King Kid's telling him, "I designed Funland to be safe from adults like you, right? And, you know, children are supposed to come in search of fun, right? So did you come in search of the other children that came here? Or are you like my parents and you just like to hurt children? Like, why are you here?" And King Kid says, "Yeah, my parents hurt me and they resented me just for existing. And like so many adults do to their sons and daughters, they hurt them. And so once I got my wishing stick, I wished for the kids to come. Any kids that felt like I did. Hundreds came, thousands. And my wishing stick alone couldn't provide enough power for all the kids that came. You know, and I give children years of fun and happiness, but once you're not a kid anymore, once you turn 18, you come here." As the elevator opens, we see all these adults in ragtag clothing that are working in this like mechanical steampunk like area, building toys or packages or turning wheels to generate power. And King Kid saying, you know, once you turn 18, you belong down here with the rest of the adults and you work until your last breath to keep Funland going. And Shazam's like, wait, they were kids? They were kids like you, like me? Like, how could you do this? You brought them here because they were afraid and they were abused. They had nowhere else to go. They were hurting. How could you do this? This is like the worst thing you could do to a kid. And King Kid says, because I hate adults and they've become adults. And that's why I wish to never become one. He's the one kid in Funland who will never grow up. And so as as Shazam's getting agitated, King Kid kind of shocks him with his wishing stick and tosses him down there to where the rest of the kids are and says, or former kids, now adults, that are toiling away. And he says, don't worry, Billy, you have company. And we see Mary's down there as well. And she's got something over her mouth to keep her from saying her magic word. And meanwhile, back in the animal lands, Darla and Freddy are being driven down the street in a truck that's got a cage on the back. And the animals are saying, I hope they never escape. Saying, yeah, it last time a human got loose, it took pandemonium to keep the civilized city safe, which it's panda hyphen monium. So I don't know, some sort of panda superhero. I'm not really sure. But they say nobody's seen him in years. And Freddy and Darla are asking, hey, anybody got the key? Really could use some help. And it looks like they're taking the humans to City Hall. And they're saying, don't worry, they're going to trial. And once they've been sentenced, they'll be fed to the tigers. So not a good place for Freddy and Darla to be. Meanwhile, back on Earth at the Vasquez foster home, Mr. and Mrs. Vasquez have called the cops. Because they went upstairs looking for the kids and they're not there because somebody who claims to be Billy's biological father has shown up and he's blaming himself for the kids not being there. And he says, yeah, I'm, this is my fault. I should have called and let you talk to Billy about me coming. He probably ran away again, just like last time. And Mrs. Vasquez is like, wait, ran away? Billy said he got lost and he could never find you. And Mr. Batson is saying, no, that's not exactly how it went down. So meanwhile, in the Gabe lands, Eugene and Pedro are there and they're being confronted by what looks to be police. And these police are asking where their registration cards are. They're like, are what? And they say, yeah, your gamer registration cards. Let's see them. They're like, wait, where the heck are we? And they respond, you're in the game lands, and everybody has a score here. And he's like, wait, a score? Like, oh, I get it. We're in the gamer lands. Right. Okay. And, one of the guys responds, yeah, you're in the game lands, Joker. And if you don't show us some ID, it's like, we don't have any ID, they're both in their Shazam personas. Like, yeah, it's not exactly like these, costumes have pockets. And he say, okay, well, what are these guys and where are you from? They say, well, these guys are referees and we're from the Earthlands. We're like, wait, Earthlands? Yeah. If you are trying to convince us you're from the Earthlands, we got a racetrack to sell you. Like they don't believe it at all. And so these guys say, well, look, Eugene and Petra, they say, look, we're not going anywhere with you because our brothers and sisters are in trouble and we need to get back. And when he says that, they get minus 500 points. And the referee says, look, you just got a penalty for verbally assaulting us. That's how the things work in the game lands. And Pedro's like, you know what? I don't really have time for this. You're not police. Like, no, we're not police. We're referees and you're about to be detained. And they're like, no, that's not going to happen. And they run off. They fly off. And Eugene's saying, well, where are we going? Hey, look, we got to find a way back to Billy and the others. And as they're flying over this futuristic looking city, they say, hey, look, there's an information booth. Let's go see if we can get some information and find out how to get back to the Funlands or the Earthlands or somewhere. Just get out of here. And so they go up to the booth and they say, hey, how do we get out of the game lands? Like, out? What do you mean? Say, well, if we wanted to go to the Funlands. And oh, you don't want to, your age, a guy like you, you don't want to go to the fun lands. You know what's going to happen. And it doesn't matter anyway, because the only way you can get out of the game lands is to get 1,000,000 points to gain access to the CPU. And the only way you can do that is to beat the game master. So when he says that, we see this guy, sort of a Tron looking guy in red and gray, who's flying on some sort of flying cycle. And it's clear that Pedro and Eugene are going to have to find a way to beat the game master, to earn their points, to be able to get back where they need to be. So meanwhile, back in the Rock of Eternity, in that train station, we see somebody off panel saying, you know, the council sealed off the lands from one another for a reason, you stupid boy. And thank God the monster lands are still closed. They're still boarded up, but for how long, I don't know. And as we turn the page, we see a full page of Black Adam, and he's saying, Billy Batson, you have no idea what you've done. And the blurb is Black Adam to the rescue for the next issue. So maybe Black Adam's going to be the one to come and save the Shazam family. They're not able to save themselves. You know, Darla and Billy especially, or Darla and Freddy especially are in trouble. You know, the threat of being eaten by tigers. They're not even in their Shazam, personas. At least Eugene and Pedro have their powers and they're able to fly. Mary's in her civilian guise as well. So I don't know, maybe Billy can remove that gag that she's wearing so she can transform. He doesn't seem to be able to be manifesting his full powers either. But maybe it's just being kind of right there under the thumb of King Kid that's neutralizing his power. So maybe a little chaos from Black Adam can help them free themselves. I guess we'll have to wait and see. The art is spectacular from Dale Eaglesham and Marco Santucci, especially some of the big page spreads, the double page spread of the Animal Lands or the Wild Lands, where we see Takitani walk out on the street the first time, and the streets are just teeming with these anthropomorphic animals. I mean, it must have taken him 3 or 4 days to draw that. I mean, so much detail, which again goes to the point about this book being perpetually late with these crazy, big page spreads. You can sort of tell the Marco Santucci pages from the Dale Eaglesham ones. And I think the art is similar enough that it's not too jarring. But man, this book is gorgeous. And the colors by Mike Atea are done really well also. All right, let's move on to the next book. It's Justice League number 21, written by Scott Snyder. We have art by Jorge Jimenez. The colors are by Alejandro Sanchez. And the letters are by Tom Napolitano. So we know at the end of 20 that this new reality, this fifth dimension that the heroes are in, or sixth dimension rather, that Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl have been told about the reality of this sort of utopian world they've been shown. By a supposed future Superman isn't what it appears to be. They were told that by the supposed child of their future selves, Shane. So this issue starts off and we see the real true Superman, who we know has been imprisoned on this planet with no sunlight. And he's being confronted by that future Superman, who at this point we still don't know who he is. And Superman's attacking him with what strength he has left. And this future Superman is easily able to just ignore the blows. And he's explaining to the true Superman that the third dimension is where things start getting real. Dots and lines and shapes they can reach through space. But once they start taking on volume, that's when existence happens, right? When you have complex forms and you can push on the forms and they have substance to them. They're a reality. And sometimes you push on one and they push back. And so he says, look, Superman, there's no point in fighting. I've explained the truth about everything. And Superman doesn't want to hear it. He's like, how could you do this? You're a monster. and he winds up everything that he has, all the strength he has left for one punch. And this future Superman's able to just hold up one finger and hold back the punch from the true Superman, and then grab him and flip him over. He's clearly much more powerful than Kal-El here. And he says, okay, are you done now? Now that I've slammed you into the ground? And when he does that, there's like a shockwave that goes out. I mean, it's such a powerful move from him just holding that fist back with one finger to grabbing his wrist and flipping him over, slamming him into the ground. He's like, okay, good. Listen, this has all happened many, many times before. I come here out of respect for you to give you a final chance to answer. But know this, you fight me one moment longer and I'm just going to kill you right where you lay. And Superman says, well, you're not going to fool my friends much longer. They're going to figure out a way to stop you. And this future Superman says, I'm not trying to fool them. I'm trying to save them, right? I'm trying to save them from the person that dooms them and the multiverse every time in every possible future. And that person is you. You know, so I made this pocket universe to hold you, and the realm where your friends are is far off, and it doesn't even give off enough light to power you. Even now, you're getting weaker and weaker. And if you keep trying to escape and leap up into the darkness, you're going to die and drift back here just like all the previous versions of you. And Superman says, even if you trap me here, and the future Superman finishes his sentence, for 100 years, you'll reach that universe and stop me? I said, yeah, like I said, I've heard it all before. We've done this before, and I have your answer once again. Goodbye, Superman. And he flies off. So meanwhile, in the new version of Gotham in this sixth dimension, Batman is sitting there with Dick Grayson, and he's saying, you know, Gotham was always a place shrouded in darkness, and now it's become this place of light. And so Batman wants to know, what happened to Alfred? And Dick says, well, he passed away just after the war. His final moments, he thought he saw you in the room with us, and he talked about all he ever wanted to do was heal you, and he's sorry that he couldn't heal you that last time, which is why he tore down Arkham and he created the Pennyworth home, which is a place where Barbara helps a lot of people heal. And Batman says, and the others? And Dick kind of gives him a rundown of what the other members of the Bat family are doing. And he says to Bruce, yeah, I know this place must feel strange to you. And Bruce is like, actually, that's the thing. It doesn't, right? Like all my life, I tried to keep Gotham safe. And the nights where I did a really good job, I'd get this feeling in the morning just as dawn was coming up. And Dick's like, yeah, that feeling was called peace, Bruce. And Batman says, yeah, but see, that's the thing. It wasn't, though, because I knew it couldn't last. And by the time I get back to the cave, that feeling was already gone. But this place is making that feeling last. It's lasting and it feels good. He's like, even the tea is good. How many times did Alfred try to get me to drink tea? You remember that? Like all the bat-shaped tea bags and the what would Batman do mugs, and every flavor was called. And Dick says, yeah, justice. He called every flavor justice, so you drink it. And Dick says, yeah, I'm happy that you're happy. You know, I'm relieved. Because we got some hard choices to make. And Batman says, I think I'm ready for them. And as he says that, he's interrupted by a mental message from the Martian Manhunter saying, hey, you need to come to the psychic boardroom now. And as he materializes there, we see everybody else is already there except for Superman. So Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, Hawkgirl, Wonder Woman, and the little boy Shane, who is the supposed child of the future Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl. And Batman says, what's going on? They're like, well, this place isn't what you think it is. And Batman says, I don't understand. And Martian Manhunter says, this future, what it is, it's someplace that's at the end of a path that we would never take. And Shane's like, uh-oh, he could be here at any moment. We need to go. And Hawkgirl's saying, look, what Shane showed us, and Wonder Woman's like, okay, hold on. You need to slow down and explain. And Shane's like, there's no time, because if you decide not to side with him, he's going to destroy all of you, just as he's destroyed your friend. And, you know, he's referring to, you know, the real Superman. So they're trying to figure this out. What should they do? And Flash is saying, look, what friend? We don't run from bad guys, so you need to explain yourself. And John Stewart's like, yeah, Superman already told us there'd be a war, and we know in war there's always casualties. But this place, it's one of the brightest places I can imagine. So what secrets, what's being hidden? And Shane says, okay, open your minds, and I'm going to show you what I showed, to them, to Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl. So just as he's about to show them, all of a sudden they all are frozen in place. And we see these sort of pink tendrils of energy surrounding them. And Martian Manhunter says that his psychic defenses have been breached, and we get a voice off panel saying, no, Shane, you won't show them the truth. I will. And we see that future Superman land in the middle of the table, and Martian Manhunter tries to stand up. He says, release us, you're not Superman. And the future Superman says, on the contrary, John, I'm the only Superman who can save you. And Batman says, okay, but if you're not our Superman, then where is our Superman? And the future version says, hey, be calm, he's safe, I promise you. And Wonder Woman says, look, if you already lied about your identity, and how do we know you're not lying about Clark and about everything? And he says, lying, huh? Even you, Diana, you've never experienced truth as pure as this place. So all you need to listen to me. I always intended to tell you the truth and to reveal myself, but first I wanted you to understand what this universe is without being intimidated by my true face and by my true form. So I recreated this form, Superman cell by cell. And we need to team up if we're going to win. And obviously the Justice League is like, what are you talking about? Dude, we don't even know who you are. And Wonder Woman goes, yeah, reveal yourself. We've heard enough. And he says, okay, so be it. So if this must happen now, let me tell you that I'm the son of Perpetua, brother to the ones you call Monitor and Anti-Monitor, the one who creates form and idea and hammers everything into existence. And as he says that, he transforms into the World Forger. And he explains to them, the multiverse is what I have built. But you need to know this, Justice League. I'm also your only hope. So meanwhile, back on Earth, we see that Mixel Piddalick has kind of gone out of control. And he's, we saw him grow and bust out of the top of the Hall of Justice a couple issues ago, and Starman and Mira are fighting him along with Jaro, trying to stop him from doing whatever he's trying to do. And Starman saying, I can sense the energy he's emitting, and it's like nothing I've ever felt. Jaro, can you talk to him? Can you calm him down? And Jaro's like talking to himself, going, Mixel Piddalick, more like crap on a stick, Plick, ha ha ha, Dad'll love it. And it's hilarious, really. And Starman's like, Jaro, stop working on one-liners and help us. He's like, one-liners, whatever. Never send a Starman to do a starfish's job. Oh yeah, I'm saving that one for later. And he attaches himself to Mixel's Piddalick. And when he does that, he kind of screams out in pain. And Starman's like, what is it? He said, look, Mixes Piddalick in this form, instead of imagining things into reality the way he normally does, he's doing the exact opposite. And if we don't stop him, he's going to unimagine everything into existence. And as on the next page, as we pull back, we see that that's exactly what's happening. The bottom of the page looks more like just the pencil work from a comic page. Colors disappearing, line works are disappearing, even the color itself is disappearing. So things are being unmade, and they need to find a way to stop Mixes Piddalick from making that happen. So meanwhile, back in the psychic boardroom, the World Forger is telling them, look, this multiverse exists to replace the other multiverse. The other multiverse, the groundwork is being prepared for it to be undone, which is exactly what we're seeing Mixius Pillick do. And World Forger is saying, my preference is that you're going to side with me willingly to try to stop what's happening, to side with justice. And one of them was like, well, to do that, we need to know the truth. And Batman says, no, what we need to know is what you're asking us to become, right? We already heard that Martian Manhunter said that this place, the sixth dimension that they're in, is a a path that they wouldn't choose to go down, right? So basically in the sixth dimension, the World Forger has created a new reality that he's going to then place over the top of the undoing of reality in kind of the real world, right? That's all going to get undone and be replaced with this. And so the World Forger says, look, days from now, Lex Luthor is going to make this argument for doom. This give everybody, every living thing, every living being in existence is going to have a choice. You're going to choose doom or you're going to choose justice. So in every reality, except here, the one that the World Forger has created in the sixth dimension, every one of the others are going to choose doom. But here in this reality that I've created, a reality where we all choose to strike first and incapacitate all those that take up arms against you, this is the only reality that we can win. And Flash is saying, wait a second. So you're saying that we go around the multiverse and we lock up everyone who would side against us before the fighting even starts? And John's like, yeah, you don't take prisoners of war before the war. Like, how many beings are we even talking about? And the World Forger says, well, it's going to be trillions, like more than half the multiverse. Because again, in every reality, people choose doom. So it's a simple majority. So it's not just half, it's more than half. And Hawkgirl says, yeah, and those that resist or escape, we go to war. We go to war for years, attacking and killing planets and systems and everybody who's against us. That's not a dream. That's a nightmare. And the World Forger gets mad and he slams his axe down. He says, listen, you think I've made a nightmare? You of all people are going to kind of condemn what I built? This is your fault. You guys are the ones that broke the source wall. You're the ones that let Perpetua wake up. Do you know the cost of imprisoning her last time? And the Justice League's kind of taken aback. And the World Forger says, I'm sorry. I regret what's happened. I regret that this is necessary and you were acting heroically at the time. But we need to evolve into a greater justice formation than ever before, right? And this multiverse, the multiverse you come from, it could have been something far greater than the one I even created. But because of what happened, that's not possible now. So our only hope is to do something fast and brutal, or everything dies. And the Flash is like, look, I'm not buying what you're selling, man. I understand that if we side with you, you're going to replace our reality with this one. But what happens to everybody down there? What happens to everybody that we imprison? And the World Forger says, well, look, all the crisis, their cosmic crisis, this is where they all stem from. And just like in those times, any being who exists is going to be transferred there. And when I strike my reality or my hammer, this reality descends and people are reborn. And one of them was like, well, what about those who have no place? Yeah. Those that are imprisoned. Can we free them after they're judged? Like when it's all completely over. And the World Fighter says, no, we got to maintain that balance for this reality to replace the other one and remain stable. They've got to be locked away forever. And Martian Manhunter is like, that's not a choice. That's not who we are. And Hawkwoman says, yeah, there's got to be another way. And then they start arguing amongst themselves. Flash is like, we have to act. And, you know, they're going back and forth. And one of them was like, stop. This arguing amongst ourselves goes nowhere, gets us nowhere. And Martian Manhunter says, yeah, look, we voted once before in this boardroom to let the totality hit Earth. And every day it's been something terrifying since then or something good. We've worried about what might happen, but I wouldn't change the way we vote because that would change who we are. And we're here together now. And Hawkgirl agrees with them. And so does Wonder Woman. And so does Flash. And so does Jon Stewart. And the one person that doesn't agree, who says that he wouldn't vote the same way as Batman. And Wonder Woman's surprised. She's like, Batman, what are you saying? You out of all of us? And Hawkgirl's like, yeah, this fight's bigger than anything we've faced. And there are going to be battles lost, but we can still turn this around. And Batman, he, you know, being a realist, he's like, can we really, though? You know, ever since we fought with Barbados, it's one step forward and two steps back. And we're losing. And the fact is, the stakes are just too high. Like, what are we clinging to? And Shane says, well, you're clinging to hope. And Batman says, well, maybe it's time that we stopped, you know, and faced reality. And Wonder Woman says, you know, Superman would never agree to this future. He would never agree to a plan where we're only saving the good, right? We need to save all of reality, not just the people who choose justice, but the people that choose doom. And the World Forger says, look, this is the only future that's possible, right? Your choice is to save the good in the universe or save no one. So, you know, time's up. You need to, I need your answer, right? I'll accept whatever you choose. And they all look within themselves. They make their choice, and the World Forger says, okay, so be it. You'll regret this. And they all disappear from the psychic boardroom. And everybody but Batman appears on Apocalypse, this new version, this sixth dimension version of Apocalypse. They can smell the fire pits, and they're thinking about how much bigger this is than their Apocalypse. And apparently this is where they keep all the bad guys. They're like, well, which bad guys? How many of our enemies do they keep here? And he goes, well, it looks like all of them. And Hawkgirl says, John, we're in big trouble. And Martian Manhunter says, yeah, I feel it too. We gotta find Superman and get out of here now. And before they can even move, they're all blasted by an energy blast and kind of knocked down. And they're kind of struggling to get up and recover when we see all these soldiers come up, all these guards that are in some sort of flying armor. And they're saying, Superman's gone forever. I know, because I'm the one that destroyed him, and you're never going to escape from here. And Hawkgirl says, well, who the hell are you? And the leader of these guards lands in front of them and says, who the hell am I? I'm Lois Lane, and I run this place. And she takes off her helmet. And sure enough, there's Lois, much older, looks a lot worse for wear, actually. And that's where the issue ends. So next, we're told Legion of Doom, Saviors of Earth, and the Justice League is not in a good place at all. So, you know, it's continuing this epic story that Scott Snyder has been telling ever since the Justice League started. Well, really since Metal started, right? That's where this all started, with the Justice League breaking the source wall and us learning about Perpetua and how all the crises have been all tied together. So an interesting story. It's big, it's kind of messy and unwieldy. But this idea that Superman would never acquiesce, and he's really the heart of the league. I do like that Snyder kind of focuses on that here, right? We see the infighting amongst themselves, and that sort of thing doesn't seem to happen when Superman is there. He really is kind of the heart and soul of the team, and they're kind of their moral compass and their leader in a way that is unspoken, right? Like, I don't think the guys, members of the team, would be arguing amongst themselves if he were there. So how he's going to escape and how important that is to the rest of the league is going to be real central to the story going forward. So going back through these issues now that Dark Knight Death Metal is over, I'm hoping to get more out of it this time and have a better understanding. I know a lot of people think it's all messy and unwieldy. I said it myself, but going back through and examining some of these ideas, hoping we can kind of see how it all played out and how it does kind of make sense. And then by the time we get to the end of it, I'm hoping to have Scott on to kind of reflect back, you know, because by the time we finish it all, we should have a good understanding where the DC universe is right now. And Scott should be able to look back on it with a little more perspective. So we'll see if we can make that happen. All right. Up next, last book I'm going to talk about is Hawkman number 11. This is written by Robert Venditti. We have pencils and inks by Brian Hitch. Along with Hitch inking, we have Andrew Curry. And colors are by Jeremiah Skipper. And letters are by Starkings and Comic Craft. So we saw last issue, a couple issues ago, actually, the Deathbringers had returned to Earth and confronted Hawkman. And I mean, Hawkman was vastly outnumbered, right? No chance to defeat these Deathbringers. And what Hawkman realized was the whole journey that he had been taking up to this point, all the different lives that he had visited, trying to find a way to stop the Deathbringers, it had all been sort of a reminder of how many times he's been reincarnated over time and space. And it was awesome at the end of last issue where he realized what an advantage that was when fighting these Deathbringers, because he basically was able to manifest all the different versions of himself and call them out. Like, so all these different versions of himself are existing at this moment in time over the skies of London, and they're the Hawkman army, and they are there trying to defeat these Deathbringers. So we get to see all the different versions. The Katar Ol of Krypton, who's awesome, maybe the most powerful Hawkman because he's got the powers of Hawkman and Superman because he's Kryptonian. We see Goldhawk of Andrino. We see Nighthawk of the Old West. We see the Dragon of Barbados. We see Airwing of New Genesis. We see Avion, Hero of the Microverse. Carter Hall, Wingman of Thanagar. Carter Thull of Ran, that's the one I was talking about last time when we talked about Hawkman 10, who's sort of this rocketeer version looking of Hawkman. It's really cool. We see Prince Khafu, Mot, Katar of ancient Egypt, and they're all fighting against these Deathbringer troops, trying to save London, trying to repel the Deathbringers. But the most important fight is between Carter Hall and Item, right? Item, knowing Carter Hall as Katar, who was the general that led the Deathbringers for thousands of years, and who was betrayed by Katar when Katar realized the Deathbringers were evil and they were doing wrong. And that's, you know, the whole idea of Carter Hall or Katar reincarnating over time, needs to save enough life so that he can balance the scales for all the death that he's brought to reality for his entire existence up to this point. So Adam is kind of mocking Carter Hall, saying, "You think this gambit's going to succeed? You could live another 10,000 years and reincarnate all these other versions of you, and it still wouldn't be enough to stop me and my Death Riders, right? We were freed so we could return the terror to the world, and Earth is going to be just the first to scream your name because this is all your fault. Without your betrayal, we might not have been able to escape, but we were driven by the thought of revenge, right? You've become our inspiration, and the whole universe is going to blame you, Katar." And Carter Hall says, "You know, neither of us were who we used to be. You've become more twisted and evil than ever before. And I'm burdened by the weight of what I learned, the fact that I was your general. You know, I'm burdened by the weight of the worlds that we ravaged and the lives that we took. And that's more powerful than your hate. Like, my regret and my shame for what I've done, you don't know anything of that. They've driven me to be good, and I understand now how strong good can be. And, you know, you can call me your enemy, you can call me your great betrayer, but you're never really going to understand who I am. I'm not Katar. That name died when I chose to be reborn, when I was made that offer to spend the rest of my existence making up for what I did. I am Carter Hall. I am Hawkman." And as he's giving the speech, they're battling back and forth, and Carter Hall's able to get the upper hand, and he actually stabs Adam. He takes Adam's spear from him and stabs him through the chest. And as Adam is laying there, spear coming out of his chest, Carter Hall says, "You know, I'm sorry, old friend, you gave me no choice, and I hope your horde has more sense." And as he turns his back to start off to help the other versions of himself, he hears Adam behind him start to laugh. He's like, "Wait, what? How are you still alive?" And Adam thinks, "Huh, all right, well, that's how unfortunate it must feel when I impale other people. And it does hurt, but you can't kill me. When you betrayed me and I fell into darkness, I was changed by that journey. And I'm unkillable. All the Deathbringers are unkillable." And Carter's thinking, "Well, what's it going to take? When is my past going to be in the past?" And Adam says, "You didn't really think that this was going to end today, right? This battle was going to be over. I told you, we owe you for the loss of a millennia, right? We've missed out on a millennia of bringing death to people because we were imprisoned. And when reality's over, when time and space cease, the last thing you're going to feel is me pulling on the chains that still bind you. you know, this isn't over. Your suffering's never going to end. So they're not looking to kill Carter Hall. They want to imprison him like they were imprisoned for all the rest of time, for as long as existence is around. They want him to suffer. And so they start fighting again. And Carter Hall says, I beat you before, I'll beat you again. But meanwhile, the other Deathbringers, who vastly outnumber this army of Hawkmen, even though he, you know, the army is, you know, in the hundreds, this Deathbringer army is in the thousands. And we see that advantage is starting to take its toll. We see the various versions of Hawkman start to be defeated. And Adam saying, you can't beat what's unbeatable. You know, every Deathbringer is just as immortal as I am, whereas all your versions, all they do is die. So he manages to punch out Carter Hall, and he says, see my victory. I came to crush you, and instead I've crushed all of you. I actually want to thank you. Thank you for turning one victory into 1,000 victories, right? Like you've called up all your different lives. And a more supreme Deathbringer has never lived, not even you. Like I'm the greatest, and you've given me the chance to show that by bringing all these different versions of Hawkman here. And Carter Hall says, you know what? You're right. This isn't about your army or my army. It's just about you and me. That's where this started, and it's where it's going to end. And Adam says, you know what? You finally understand, right? You finally are grasping the inevitable. You can have this army of Hawks, and they all share in your softness. You know, you betrayed the Deathbringers. You stopped being a functional Deathbringer and gave in to the soft feelings. And they can't save you because they're just as diseased and soft as you. And they certainly can't save this world. This is where it all begins. We're going to destroy the Earth, and then, you know, all the rest of the planets in existence. And he doesn't actually finish off Carter Hall. He says, you know what? Deathbringers, return to the ships. And Hawkman's like, wait, what are you doing? Where are you going? So we see all the other Deathbringers. They all fly back to the ship. And Adam gives the order to the giant sort of machines, these robotic Deathbringers that are just huge. And he says, the order is given, incinerate the city, then incinerate all the Earth. And these giant robotic hawk-looking Deathbringers start powering up and start to glow. And Adam says, commence firing sequence. And all the rest of the Hawkmen look up at this and they say, oh my God, like how are we going to stop this? And we're told next issue is the countdown. So how the Hawkmen are going to stop these giant robotic looking beings, these three giant mech looking Hawk Deathbringers that are starting to glow in various parts of their body and are going to start to incinerate the planet. Not sure how they're going to stop them. Not sure how they're going to defeat this Deathbringer army who are immortal. You know, Adam was stabbed right through the middle of the chest with his own spear, and he laughed it off like it was nothing. It hurt apparently, but he was able to you know, pull the spear out of his own chest and stand up and say, hey, I'm back. I'm immortal. You won't defeat me. So it's going to take more than just brute force or, you know, physically trying to stop these guys. It's going to take, I don't know, challenging their ideologies, trying to understand their motivations. I'm not really sure. It was such a cool moment when Carter Hall was able to manifest these other Hawkmen from other realms of time and space to come and fight. And you thought that would turn the tide, even though he was outnumbered. But that turned out not to be the case at all. So not sure what Venditti has planned. So we'll have to come back for issue 12 and see if Carter Hall is able to find a way to defeat the Deathbringers, and in that way sort of feel like he's redeemed himself somewhat. You know, maybe he still hasn't balanced the cosmic scales for all the death and destruction he brought in his life as general of the Deathbringers, but at least he can feel like he's on the home stretch, I guess you'd say, right? Like he's defeated his kind of his greatest enemy, to his own words, when he was fighting a dam in this issue, where he says, how can you still be alive? When am I going to get past being part of the Deathbringers? When is my past going to be my past? When am I going to be able to leave it behind? In defeating the Deathbringers, that's really what he can do. His past can be his past. And yes, even though it's a part of him and he's reincarnated over time and space, you know, hundreds, if not a thousand times, at least he knows that he's finally defeated the Deathbringers. And it's just a matter of matching up the numbers now. So, you know, I've talked a lot on this podcast about what an amazing idea this is, that Robert Venditti has been able to create this new mythos for Hawkman that doesn't throw out or discount anything that's come before. I mean, we've talked about how DC is all about the everything matters, everything counts now. Venditti did it 2 years ago in Hawkman. So it's the best Hawkman story, the best Hawkman series that I've ever read. And I kind of wish it was still going. So like I said, next time we'll find out how Carter's able to stop this. I mean, I know how he's able to stop it because I, you know, have read the remainder of the series, but don't want to spoil anything, and we'll continue to spotlight Hawkman issues going forward. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. Hope you listen to our other episode today, which is the DC Spotlight with Rocky from Comic Boom, which focuses on the most recent DC books that came out this week. So doing some old books, doing some new books concurrently to give you guys your DC fix on both current stuff as well as these things that happened a couple years ago that are really sort of informing what's going on in the current universe, in the Infinite Frontier era. So again, I want to thank everybody for listening as always, and thank you for your support, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.